Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drama on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It can be a life-changing disease that some of you may not be familiar with. Crohn's disease is a disease of the intestine. It can be severe, it can be painful, and in some cases even worse. Well, tonight, on this Medical Monday, we'll talk about the symptoms and the treatments. My guests are Dr. Angersem Kabrieb. He is associate professor with the Department of Internal Medicine at Howard University Hospital. Also, Melody Narain Blackwell. She is a Crohn's disease patient, also an advocate. And also we have Joy. She is a Crohn's disease patient. Lines are open. If you have a comment or a question about this topic on this Medical Monday, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. As always, you can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Thank you all for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Dr. Kabrieb, let me first start with you. Can you give me a working definition of what Crohn's disease is and kind of explain how it impacts the intestine?
Crohn's disease, thank you for having me.
Sure.
Crohn's disease is chronic inflammation of the GI tract. Actually, the two most common are Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. There is another one, lymphocytic colitis, but this is a chronic inflammation of the GI tract. It can affect any part of the GI tract, starting from mouth to the anus. And it has a waning and remitting character, like it flares and it goes to remission. It's a chronic sort of lifelong. We don't talk about cure when it comes to Crohn's disease, but we can control and we can keep the patient in remission for a long period of time with the management we have.
How does it present itself? And is this something that can impact every age group or what?
So it can affect any age group. The most common age group is 20s to 30s, young. It affects young age group dominantly. And the most common symptoms are abdominal pain. They have diarrhea or more frequent stools. They may have weight loss. And there are some subtle symptoms, but the most common presenting are abdominal pain and diarrhea. With weight loss.
Melody, talk to me about your Crohn's disease experience. When did you first realize that this was more than something you ate?
You know what's interesting? I grew up kind of with gastro issues. Mm-hmm. So I think I kind of pacified it a little bit, or I thought that it was just a stomach ache. But then it was a stomach ache for like 2 years, every day for like 2 years. And anything that I ate, it would trigger a stomach ache. And it wasn't the kind of stomach ache that was a cramping stomach ache, but just like an irritating, unrelenting type of stomach ache. I didn't have to use, it wasn't, I have to go to the bathroom or I'm having a cramp or it's a knot. It was just like a weird, throbbing, unrelenting pain. And from there, I started getting other symptoms, though. And I remembered at one point I had, internal hemorrhoid. Mm-hmm. So I noticed there was bleeding in from my colon. And I said, oh, it's just that. I was telling the doctor, I said, I just thought if I ate more green beans and more kale, I would be okay. Because as a teenager, when I dealt with that, that's what I did. That was the remedy for it. Mm-hmm. But that remedy didn't work. And I started to not be able to control the bleeding. And when I would use the bathroom, I had to hold on to walls or I had to hold on to the toilet or to the toilet paper handle. I had to hold on because I felt like someone literally took knives and they were scraping down the insides of my colon. And that for me, after about 2 weeks of that, and even my husband, he would notice things and he's like, you need to go to the doctor. You need to get this checked out. I knew I couldn't avoid it anymore because that pain was so severe. Like, it would cause me to sweat. And I felt like I was going to pass out when I was using the bathroom.
My goodness. Now, Joy, your experience was not as severe.
No. This has been maybe a 10-month journey for me so far. So it just happened earlier this year in the spring. I suddenly was having really strange, very similar, just strange stomach aches. Whether I was eating a salad, a piece of cake, it didn't matter. Like, everything that I ate was giving me the same sort of dull, painful, very targeted area stomach aches. And, you know, I just kind of realized pretty quickly that it wasn't normal. It was too consistent to be nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how old are you?
I'm 28. Well, I was 28 at the time, just turned 29 this weekend.
Okay, so this is, again, you're a very young person. Prior to this, prior to 10 months ago, any symptoms at all? Any problems at all?
Nothing like this. And so, sort of same thing. Always kind of struggled with, like, just gastrointestinal issues, sensitive stomach, sensitive to certain foods, but never anything quite like this before.
Doctor, how severe can this situation be? Obviously, Melody is an example of the severity of this situation. But untreated, how? What are we talking about here?
Yeah, so this can be severe. In some patients, it's actually life-changing. It can be mild and remains in remission for a long period of time, provided that the proper care and early treatment has started. Otherwise, it can complicate. It can sometimes patients present to us intestinal obstruction. What that means is a blockage of the intestine, and they may need surgery.
Really?
Yes, and actually, we want to avoid emergency surgery as much as possible because the potential complication of emergency surgery is more than elective, selected, because it can prevent, reduce, elevate some of the potential complications, including infection. They can present as bleeding, and the bleeding, like she was mentioning, that can, one of the common misconceptions is it can present as a simple hemorrhage, like, so a delayed diagnosis, and that can cause potential complication at a later time. And fistula, part of sort of tunneling between two organs, there can be a tunneling as a complication.
A tunneling?
A tunneling between
two. What does that mean exactly?
What that means is normally the GI system is as a tube. It conveys the materials through that within intact parameters and borders, but that can penetrate or perforate to another organ. It could be a bladder. In some females, it could be to the pelvic organs, and that causes a tunnel or communication between these two organs, and drainage of intestinal content can pass through that, cause infection and other complications as well.
That sounds dangerous.
It is, and it can cause severe complication, infection, what we call sepsis. Infection can be localized, sort of abscess or pus collection in one area, which can be managed by antibiotic and surgical drainage, or it can cause systemic infection, which can cause sepsis, and that is one of the common complications that we see need to be addressed in an MICU setting or ICU setting.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about Crohn's disease on this Medical Monday. If you have a comment, if you have a question, if you are concerned about how you may be feeling if you have not been diagnosed, but some of the symptoms that are being discussed during this conversation may sound somewhat familiar, please give us a call again at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me go to Tanisha. Tanisha, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just was listening to the doctor speak about the fistula and how it can affect your bladder. And I was agreeing with the doctor because I was diagnosed at 25. I'm 33, and I did experience that. I did experience the whole fistula, bladder complication. And when I was diagnosed, my Crohn's was so intense that I was pretty much in and out of the hospital for an entire summer. And my bladder and my colon did connect, which I can relate to the previous Crohn's patient that spoke about the bathroom issues. I was actually experiencing bowels coming through my bladder. So it can be very intense. But I just wanted to say to the young ladies, it was very tough for me to go through that. And I got through it. And I just want to say to you all that, you know, it's a tough disease to deal with, but you will get through it. You will survive it. You know, just keep pushing, keep fighting. I deal with it till this day. I've been in good standing since 25. I haven't had any issues. I did have a surgery where they did move a small part of my intestine, but I'm in good condition now. I'm medication free. And I'm out doing Uber as we speak right now.
So
I just wanted to speak on that and just give my comment and, you know, just call in because I can relate a lot to the young lady that's on the air with you now.
Okay. Tanisha, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tanisha. I also have a Facebook group. It's called The Color of Crohn's and Chronic Illness. I'd love for you to be a part of that. I can totally relate. I, too, have fistulas. I've had four of them, and I actually have two drains in my colon currently. So I can absolutely relate to you.
Tanisha, thank you so much. For those who aren't familiar, what is a fistula?
So a fistula is like what I was trying to mention earlier, is the tunneling between two organs. So normally, which you don't expect to have a connection, but they have a connection now. So content of one part of the organ from the GI tract, for example, crosses to the other organ. It could be a bladder. It could be pelvic organs. It could be through the vaginal in females, or it could be two parts of the intestine themselves. So on crossing, that can spill some of the GI tract contents and that predispose to infection and continuous drainage that may need a continuous care.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is our Medical Monday conversation, and we are talking about Crohn's disease. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. I believe this is Berta calling from Clinton. Berta, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I was calling. I've been diagnosed with colitis for over 28 years. And it's inflammation of the colon, very painful, but I'm medicine-free. But I'm just curious, how do they tie in together?
That's a great question, doctor.
That's a great question. Thank you. Inflammatory bowel disease as a group, the two most common causes are Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. There is few cases of what we call lymphocytic colitis. But what you're mentioning is ulcerative colitis. It affects the colon, or what we call the large intestine. The relationship they have is they are chronic inflammatory diseases, both of them. They are lifelong. They can come and go as flare and remission, and they need coordinated care. The difference comes, the ulcerative colitis is localized to the colon, and it affects only the inner lining of the colon. So most of the time is less complicated when it comes to obstruction or like a fistula we were talking about earlier. But it can cause infection. It can cause bleeding. It can run the patient to a bathroom even though the content are not that much. And those may need treatment. So they do have a common relationship because of the chronicity and inflammation. And there is a difference on that complication. Ulcerative colitis can cause more potential risk for colon cancer unlike the Crohn's disease, but Crohn's disease will have that complication if it affects the colon as well.
Interesting. Thank you so much for your phone call, Berta. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This is our Medical Monday conversation, and we are talking about Crohn's disease. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call quickly. Kelly, calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling, Kelly. What's on your mind? Kelly, are you there? Go right ahead.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Please, okay. Yes, go ahead.
Hey, I just want to come at you all. You know, I'm not trying to minimize the disease or anything, but I had Crohn's. I had ulcerative colitis as well. Once I changed my diet to a plant-based diet, what's called the G-bombs, greens, beans, onions, mushrooms, berries, and seeds, the colitis, the Crohn's, went away. I suffered with this thing for like 5 years until I changed my diet. It's the processed foods that we eat. It's the sugars. It's the starches. All I'm saying is if you change your diet, you go on a plant-based diet, I'm telling you, this works. And it's also the Genesis 1, chapter 1, 29, that's our diet too. It tells us what to eat. That's our medicine. Food. Our medicine is our food, and our food is thy medicine.
Well, Kelly, let me stop you there because I've got to take a break. I'll ask the doctor about your comment. Also, Joy did have a change in her diet. We'll talk to her about that as well. So please, Kelly, stay on the line. Also, Paul calling from Maryland. Stay on the line. Sophia just calling in from Hyattsville. We're going to talk to you as well. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm with Jeff Brown is coming up on WHUR, but this conversation will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. And we're still going to answer your questions even after the break at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about Crohn's disease on this Medical Monday. My guests are Dr. Agrasim Kabrib. He is Associate Professor with the Department of Internal Medicine at Howard University Hospital. Also, Melody Narain Blackwell. She is a Crohn's disease patient and an advocate. Also, Joy, she is a Crohn's disease patient. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise I will take your phone call. Dr. Kabrib, Kelly was talking about changing one's diet. Is that applicable in all forms of Crohn's disease?
Thank you, Kelly, for your question. So when it comes to the management of Crohn's disease or IBD in general, it's multifaceted. So the patient has a role. The physician or the medical team had a role. And in the surgery or multidisciplinary approach is the key to the management. So depending on the severity she has, diet may be the only option, and she can maintain that provided that she stays in remission. And we have to check there is no sign of inflammation, including on the clinical examination. The lab results we check, imaging or CAT scan, sort of X-ray with computer-assisted imaging may be needed to make sure we're not missing anything, including endoscopic evaluation. Having said that, if there is no acute flare or inflammation, but predisposition which can be avoided with changing the diet, that we prefer as well, provided that we continue follow-up.
Well, are there any other kinds of treatments, even outside of the diet and outside of surgery, that you might share with us?
Yes, of course. Actually, there are multiple medications at this time, fortunately. In earlier years, it was limited. Now we do have different stages of medication. There are at least four or five of them. The first class, we call them, is anti-inflammatory. These are early medications for a mild type of disease. 5-ASAs, bisalamin, there are different names of them. And if that doesn't work, steroids can help in a short period of time. We don't like to give steroid for a long period because they have a lot of complication, including bone disease, including diabetes, or at least increased blood sugar, blood pressure, and all that. So we give steroids for a short period of time. If this doesn't work, we do have what... So these are just local anti-inflammation. So they just reduce the inflammation of the lining. If this medication doesn't work, we have what we call immunomodulators. You modify or depress the immunity so that they don't flare up. And part of them could be what azathioprine, mercaptoprine, methotrexate. These are probably medical terms, may not necessarily need the detail at this time. But immunomodulators, and if still this doesn't work, we do have a class, the recent ones are what we call biologics, and and there are different forms of them, can be given in an injection format, subcutaneous format, or in an infusion format as well. So there are good developments.
Kelly, thank you for sharing with us. Joy, talk to me about when you had to make some changes after your diagnosis. What did you do?
Well, when I went in to have, just to have myself checked up when I was feeling strange, having these symptoms, I also requested a blood test for an allergy test, basically a food sensitivity test, because I figured no matter what I have, if I'm eating things that I'm allergic to or that are causing my body inflammation, you know, it's not going to help the situation. So that was sort of how I began to, that was sort of my roadmap for changing my diet and improving my symptoms and my situations. Getting that blood test done, seeing what all of my sensitivities were, completely eliminating those things, and then going from there.
Were there things that you stopped eating?
Yeah.
Such as?
So the number one most thing that I was, like, sensitive to on the list was celery, which I didn't even really eat celery anyway, but it's just remarkable the things that are on there. It's things that you wouldn't even think. Like, you know, dairy was on there, cucumbers, celery, like I said, strawberries. So all of those things, I just, you know, immediately cut out wheat. Yeah, it's remarkable.
So what do you eat?
A lot of sweet potatoes. I really try to incorporate as much like fermented food as I can. Lots of krauts and things like that to try to keep the good bacteria in my gut. A lot of foods without the skin. So I do like, I'll do an apple, but I'll make sure I take the skin off. Just anything that takes the stress off of my body having to like just digest, you know, hard matter. Mm-hmm. Even like harder greens like kale and things like that, I try to stay away from. I eat a lot of microgreens. Yeah.
What is a microgreen?
They're sort of like...
Is that like a millennial thing? I don't know.
No.
If I were to say microgreens to my mother, she would probably say, what? No collards? What? I don't know. What is...
They're just sort of like small... I didn't even know how you would really classify a microgreen.
Spinach?
No. Well, not. That's not a microgreen.
I don't know. What?
They're just sort of like tiny little greens that are... Like, I don't know, how would you describe it, Doctor?
I'm not sure which particular microgreen when it comes to... I think when it comes to diet and IBD, they are patient-specific in a way. Evidence-based, when we bring the research into the picture, some type of diet works so for some patients, so it's very difficult to sort of make for everybody the same recommendation. But there are a few things that we tell our patients to avoid, like avoid high-fiber diet, like what she was mentioning, the peeling off the cellulose part or the cover of the fruits. Some patients, nuts and sort of popcorn, that type make worse. and seeds containing some of the fruits there. So we tell them small frequent meals, sort of low residue carb diet. And there are the one earlier you were mentioning, the elimination diet at the early is not tasty, is not comfortable, so it's difficult for many patients to follow up. But that's the type. So it's not for a general recommendation as per se guidelines, but
for
there
specific
are patient-specific. Yeah.
Microgreens, young greens.
Young greens.
Yes, very, yes, baby greens.
Yeah, it's just like, really, they're very tiny.
But not even that they're small.
Well, they are small.
Yeah,
but they're not fully developed.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. Pre-adolescent greens.
Oh, yes. That's the, they're undeveloped or underdeveloped.
That's right. That's right. There you go. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Sophia calling from Hyattsville. Thanks for calling, Sophia. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. I also suffer from ulcerative colitis, and it's similar, like the doctor said, to Crohn's. I suffer from my bleeding from the rectum. I suffer from the blow-up of the stomach. My question is, the doctors want me to have colonoscopies like every year. That can be also dangerous. Because they can nip you, they can cut you, and it's all kind of things, complications that can come from having a colonoscopy. Also, how do you develop this? How did this come about? I mean, I didn't have it until I was in my 30s. I'm a diabetic. I try to watch what I eat. It's just a lot of things, and I suffer from it, and it's very painful. It affects your life.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to watch what I eat.
But let me see if I can get an answer from the Dr. Sophia. Do you have any idea where this comes from?
So thank you, Sophia, for the question. So there is no specific cause per se when it comes to inflammatory bowel disease. There are multiple factors considered. There is definitely a genetic predisposition. There is hereditary component to it. Environmental triggers are key, so including some diet and toxins trigger. Nowadays, there is a lot of research which involves the bacterial normal flora of our gut and as a triggering. And probably they are also considering as part of a lot of research going on as to help in the treatment arena as well. So multifactorial on its origin, there is no specific cause per se, but environmental triggers in a genetically predisposed patient and then sort of uncontrolled immune response to a trigger.
I see. Thank you so much, Sophia, for your phone call. Melody, any history in your family of anything like this at all?
So I have an aunt who actually has Crohn's disease, but her Crohn's is so different from mine. There's different types of Crohn's disease. It's not just like one type. So hers was more in the upper GI tract, and she actually had to have a piece of her intestines removed. Mine is perianal, so it's at the bottom, right at the end of my colon, and then my rectum. So it's completely different. And I was thinking about the lady when she was saying diet. I did a lot of, like, I ate well anyway, naturally, but I did a lot of diet changes and I eliminated things from my diet. But I eliminated, like, corn and flour and different processes. And she was saying, you know, you have to eat completely plant-based. That doesn't work for everybody. Especially like me, a person who has drains in their colon and I'm losing a lot of blood consistently, I need iron. And if you have a colon problem, you don't want to take iron pills. And I don't eat beans. I can't eat beans. It's too much fiber in them. So, you know, it's a balance to these things. So a lot of times when people hear that you do have IBD, the first thought usually is like, oh, you have a problem pooping. No, that's not what it is. And then they'll say, oh, if you do this, you get a lot of remedies, but everybody's symptoms are different. One thing that I haven't heard anybody say is the severity of the joint pain that you get with IBD.
Like, why is that?
It's a result. That's how I always know how bad my Crohn's is or what's going on with me is that I start to get crippling pain in my feet first. And the doctors initially kept saying, oh, you have gout. You have gout. No, I don't. I have Crohn's-induced arthritis. And it's crippling. And it can go up your back and your spine through your limbs. And that stopped me from walking. And the one doctor was thinking, oh, it's rheumatoid, but it's not. There's a lot of elements. So when the doctor says it can be severe, there's so many things to this, and it masks itself in different people as different things. And if you don't have the right team or the right doctors, you will just be playing like drawing straws. You'll play in the game of like, what is it? Could it be this? Could it be that? Because there's a lot of symptoms that one IBD patient can have, and it could be pointing to one thing, and that means getting your colon in order.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned before we went on the air that you said this was a life changing, and other than the obvious that you've shared prior to your diagnosis, kind of compare and contrast, because the other thing is you're a mother, you have a son. Mm-hmm. So what was the pregnancy like? Were there issues?
So here's the thing that's very interesting. My son will be 6 on December 28th. I believe that the pregnancy triggered my Crohn's, that it could have been dormant in my body. And then when I gave birth to my son, because I had a tumor in my face before I found out I was pregnant, I had that removed and they said, you have something autoimmune. I went to a rheumatologist. They couldn't figure out what the autoimmune thing was that I had. I got pregnant. I had my son. And then I battled massive amounts of edema. I would literally be talking to you like this and my lip would start to grow and hang. I was Nutty Professor. Mm-hmm. That's who I was. It would just start. And I went and I ate all organic. Like, I eliminated a lot of things. I did not eat like fruit that was not organic, and that helped helped it subside a little bit, but it was still there. Like, there was remnants of it. It was thing there. And I started getting these other symptoms like as the years came, and then eventually I was diagnosed with Crohn's, but it took probably 2.5 years for me to get diagnosed with Crohn's disease. And when I said Crohn's was life-changing, when I finally had the emergency surgery after almost going into a septic infection, I was laid off from my job, and that was the best thing that could have happened to me, because I would not have been able to work to battle having to take 3 baths 3 to 4 times a day. That's what I had to do after I had my first surgery, because I had these drains and I was constantly bleeding and I couldn't function. So I had to do that 3 to 4 times a day. I had 3 surgeries. I had to get used to the new normal. I couldn't walk. I couldn't wear shoes. I went through so many things, and I had the support of an amazing husband and an amazing family. But if I didn't have those things, I never would have made it. And if I had to go to work, I would not have had a job. So luckily, I got laid off. Mm-hmm. So that was a blessing, because I am an entrepreneur. So I had that aspect of things to back me up, but I couldn't have gotten to work. And I think about these people that I know that are battling the fatigue. That's another thing. You could sleep for 2 days straight and wake up and feel like you have ran for 4 days. Like, you will not. It's unrelenting exhaustion, and it's not tired. You're not like, oh, I'm tired, let me take a nap. It's a fatigue. Like, something is pushing your head down and trying to shut your eyes, but you're not sleeping. And
yeah, you can't open your eyes. Yeah,
it's indescribable.
Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Paul. We've lost Paul. Paul, give me a call back if you can. Let's go to, I believe this is Tresina calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yes, go right ahead.
Oh, yeah. So, hey, Harold. I actually...
Hey! There is only one Tresina. How did I not know? Tresina Gray. Go right ahead, Tresina. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, so earlier, like in my mid-20s, I didn't know what was going on with my body. I would have joint pain and sometimes very crippling. And so that was my initial experience with Crohn's. Didn't initially attack my gastro area. And then later on, like it took about 2 years for them to diagnose it. because then I would also vomit and have a lot of excessive diarrhea. So I was initially diagnosed with colitis, and then the Crohn's came later, and then I think it went back and forth. But what I've learned is it. I don't know if you touched on this because I missed some of the conversation. It's also triggered because you may have silent stress that you're not aware of. That's what they always say. It's triggered by silent stress. That's what they. I'm like, what am I stressed out about? Apparently, there were things going on that were stressing me, so it was triggered by that. And then there, over the years, sometimes I've been in denial because at times I would be in remission for long periods of time. Even though my gastroenterologist said I should always take the medicine for life, that I'm always going to have it, I used to get upset because some of the medication he would give me had other effects, especially prednisone. I could not stand when he would give me prednisone. This affected me in so many ways earlier. It was interesting that he said between 20 and 30, because that's when that was the high point of everything that would happen to me.
So let me ask you something, Tracina, because you said silent stress. Are you talking about external stresses that happened during the course of life? Or are you talking about internal stresses?
Underlying stress, maybe what I was going through, you know.
Right, okay, things that were going on in life.
In life.
Yeah.
Sometimes you may not even be aware of what is bothering you.
Mm-hmm.
So after I think 20 to 30 was the high point.
Okay.
Even to the point where I had inflammation in my eye, so they had to put a steroid and steroid medication drops in my eye.
That was the most debilitating
those years.
Well, let me see what the doctor has to say about that. Tracina shared a lot with us. Your thoughts, particularly about the silent stress piece.
Hmm. So, thank you very much for your comment and questions. So, stress is considered one of the triggers. It's not overtly known in research studies to sort of conclude for everybody. But stress in life, even stress of the disease itself can trigger one of the triggering. Earlier, a couple of points you mentioned it, the joint pain, that's very important. We do have what we call intestinal and the GI tract symptom, and then extra-intestinal. So one of the common manifestations of extra-intestinal is a joint pain. There are different type of them. They are symmetric and asymmetric. What you had was what you call asymmetric, and it goes with inflammation. So you described it very nicely because the asymmetric joint pain goes with the inflammation inside. So it can tell you still the inflammation is there. Other extra-intestinal manifestations are what we call the uveitis. It affects the eye. And then episcleritis, it affects the white and then the circular part of the eye. And it can cause inflammation and ulceration of the mouth, she was describing. So it can be complicated. And the location, as you mentioned earlier, Crohn's disease, about 45-50% we call is at the end of the small intestine and starting of the large intestine. But 20-25% is around the anorectal, including the fistulizing type. About 20% could be small intestine only. 5-7% is on the upper GI, including the stomach. So the distribution could be different, and depending on the distribution and location, the symptoms you present and then the management you need could also be different.
Tracina, thanks for sharing. First time on my show. I appreciate you. Yeah. I will see you at work.
I want to ask one quick question.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Doctor, once someone is diagnosed with that, are they supposed to take medication throughout? Because sometimes I'm in denial because I don't think I have it because I'm in remission, and I don't regularly take medication because for the most part, the majority of my years within the last 15 years, I don't have a lot of flare-ups.
Doctor?
Yes, so that's very important, and one of the common problems is what we call the sort of non-compliance, knowingly or unknowingly, because the type of disease comes in flare and then it remains in remission. On the remission part, you need to work with your doctor, and you may need medication and follow up some of what we call inflammatory markers you may not have the symptom, so that's what you feel. You don't need to take medication, but the markers will show that there is inside inflammation at a lower level. So you need medication for those, or at least you need a follow-up and work with your doctor whether you need medication at this time or not.
Tracina, thanks again for calling in. I appreciate it. Let me go to Aja. Aja calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How you doing, Harold?
Just fine.
Good. I've been diagnosed with Crohn's since 96. I was in the hospital almost 2 months because back before they diagnosed me, it was hard. They was doing all these tests on me, checking me for colon cancer. I had the barium. I had it all. Got discharged. Had pain, sharp pains. I mean, just to the point I couldn't walk. That's when my mom was like, this it. She took me back to, actually, she took me to another hospital, Shady Grove in Rockville, Maryland. And, that's when they diagnosed me with Crohn's. So now, I've been in remission for a year and a half, right now. The doctor had me on Remicade. So he wants me on there for, he said he wanted to put me on for the first 2 years. I started getting some side effects with my skin. So I just wanted to ask the doctor, you know, what, you know, is there, why is he giving me the first 2 years? Is there like a long-term side effect or?
Doctor.
Yeah, excellent question. So, yeah, the medications have their own side effects. Almost we say every medication has its own side effect, but when the benefit overweighs is where we start the medication. There are particular side effects we follow when it comes to the infusion you are getting. It could be either infliximab, Remicade, or a similar medication biologic you're taking. Drug reaction related to the medication is one of them. Some patients show some skin manifestation. The third complication is a cancer, and which can be seen in very, very few patients. So even though it's not absolute, not zero for a cancer, but when it comes to absolute number, is very, very rare. About 5 to 6 people per 100, per 10,000 cases can have a cancer when it comes to lymph node or lymphomas or a skin cancer, which are the worst complication, but fortunately very rare.
Okay. Aja, thank you so much for your phone call. Joy, I know you were kind of nodding. Did you have side effects from any treatments that you may have undergone?
So I've never been medicated for Crohn's. I've basically just treated it purely with diet and change in habits and but I did, around the same time that I was getting those initial signifiers with the stomach aches, my skin was also going crazy, just in ways that I had never really experienced before. And it kind of all goes back to that inflammation. Like, it's all inflammation in some
form.
How so what?
You said it was going crazy. Like,
I was getting strange breakouts, very dense on my cheeks and just in areas on my face that I had never broken out before, which to me, I was like, okay, that's weird. Like, this is not, like, my usual breakout.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I would get little, like, they would be like whelps almost, like under my skin. It wasn't like a bump, but it would be like
painful.
They were really, really, really odd. I noticed that. And I, whenever the medicine, the dosage is too high or something for me, my skin just goes like berserk and I get these like whelps, weird things in my face.
This is very complex, obviously. And, you know, particularly as it relates to the symptoms and what person to person may be experiencing. From your perspective, Melody, and you've now been dealing with this for how many years?
I was officially diagnosed October 2018.
2018.
I've been dealing with the symptoms probably 3.5 years now.
So in the 3.5 years, what is the thing, and obviously you are an advocate, so you're certainly well-versed. What is the thing that you've learned the most, not only about this, but as it relates to your body and the way that you are trying to live more healthily?
We need to listen to our bodies. Our bodies, if you take a moment to listen to what your body's saying. If you do have a stomach ache or skin breakouts that are reoccurring that aren't normal. There's we know that there's a level of normal. We know what our own individual level of normal is. Nobody can tell you what your normal is because they can't be you. You know that. So when those things start to get off track, pay attention. Write it down. It doesn't hurt to have a planner or a journal or a book where you're saying, oh, you know what, this doesn't make sense or this is kind of weird. I make notes in my calendar because I know that I have IBD, so I have to figure out, is there going to be a pattern of this or was this a one-off situation? Am I going to still be, is my skin going to break out? Is my fingers going to hurt when I'm writing or is this a one-off thing? Am I getting carpal tunnel or is this a joint issue? Mm-hmm. You know, you have to listen to your body because your body starts to speak to you. But we ignore so many things and pass it off as, oh, that's just a little indigestion or I just ate a little too much cheese. Where I knew when I ate dairy, I would be crawling. Like this was before mm-hmm. I knew I had IBD. So listen to your body. Your body's talking to you.
Mm-hmm. Joy, do you have a final thought?
No, I totally agree with that. Definitely listen to your body and don't be scared to investigate. Like those are the moments where you need to kind of dive in and figure it out. Like don't run from it or pass it off as, you know, small things. Because the more you wait, the worse it becomes. Like it can be something simple. I think things go wrong in your body. Everyone thinks like, oh God, it's like the worst possible thing, but it could be something curable. It could be something manageable.
Mm-hmm. Doctor, final thought from you?
So everybody's comments are excellent, and we actually like when our patients know more about their disease. That's very helpful. You usually talk about coordinating the care between the patient, the doctor, surgeon, nutritional, sometimes even consulting and counseling. And a couple of points I want to mention is that this is a chronic disease, but it needs a follow-up. So remission doesn't mean cure, so it needs a follow-up on that one. And another important point is there is a hope and there is a multiple alternative of treatments for this at different stages, and there's a help in all this.
Well, I want to thank all of you, Dr. Agrasam Kabrib, Melody Noreen Blackwell, and Joy for coming in. I wish you both the best of health. And again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, December 16th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.